You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio, but people from all over the USA can tune in simply by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link or the Rebroadcast link, which is listed right under it. It's called Listen Anytime Here. Well, we have a very exciting broadcast today, but I first would like to mention, please go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. If you got today's email, go over and send an email to a family or friend. This is how our audience, our supporters continue to grow. Another way that our efforts are growing is we are doing something special with Mike Sessions. It's the Buy American V2.4 update, which is now available on the App Store. It's got a lot of new content, the new American Workers panel members, bios, links to the member show, including Rich and Mark, a quick plug in to the radio show here on the morning. And by the way, it is linked on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. It's right under the Tell Congress China Should Not Be Involved with America's Ports. Click on that. And by the way, that has been going very well also. The whole deal is on hold. For many years in the past, it was moving. More and more countries were interested in investing in America's ports. But with the help of Curtis Ellis bringing this to our attention and the people clicking on that link and letting their congressman know, and I'll tell you, that link was very well done because it went immediately to your local congressman and let them know how you feel. So if you want to make sure that port and any other ports that were under consideration are not going to be turned over to any foreign countries, click on there and let them know how you feel about this one port that was going to happen in China. Right under that, you will see the AmericanWorkersRadio.com, the blue promo there. Click on that. It'll take you to Mike Sessions and all that he is doing. Thank you, Mike, for doing a very, very great job to help us promote the American-made movement. Well, I'm proud to say all of our panel members are worked up and ready to go. Today is open session because it's one of those days. Everybody with us. Make sure you go to the phone because it's going to be good. First of all, I want to thank our people who volunteer their time and efforts to be part of this broadcast. Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store. And I want to remind you to go to his link on the front page of American Workers Radio. It's that great Made in America store link. Click on that. And right under that, it's the Made in America radio show with Mark Andel. If you click on Rich Logis's picture, it'll go right to him. I want to also say thank you to Larkin Connolly, the National Small Business Advocate, who is always a man with a lot of opinions, and he keeps me abreast of things, which I like, and that's good. You need many opinions in this world. Our opinions are very positive. I also want to thank Rich Logis. Boy, he's an energetic guy. Make sure you check out his show. He also lets it be said the way he likes to hear it, and guests are always welcome to have what's on their mind broadcast on his show. I also want to thank Henry Chaplinsky, our engineer, who always does an unbelievably good job making sure the program is up, ready to go, make sure those emails are out, sends out the email after the broadcast. We are rocking and rolling. I'm Michael Blihash. Thank you for spreading the word. Thank you for always letting me know in my travels that you tune into the show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, on this broadcast, from the very beginning of the movement, back in 1999 on my Saturday show, I've been stressing the fact that when American workers lose their jobs, they do poorly. When American workers have a job, they do better. That is not only a fact we're seeing happening right now before our eyes, especially in the last year and a half. We've been seeing a lot of good things happen. I want to also mention, while I can, I received a notification from an elected official, and hopefully in about 2 weeks we'll have him on speaking about a piece of legislation that he has proposed. They listened to the broadcast, and we'll be able to hear directly from him as he gets back into Washington. I believe that's happening in the next 10 days. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, when a person has a job, it really adds to their quality of life in America. Like Larkin, he tells you about the various things that he did in his life, the various jobs he had, the businesses. The guy's positive because he had opportunities to be a very important person in many people's lives. Mark Andel, he went from a man that was hurt by outsourcing to a man who grew his business. He went forward to go for the American-made movement. The Made in America store came about. This guy is very positive. Rich Loges was a writer, now a radio guy, on our show for over 5 years. These are people who have added to the positiveness of what is happening in this country. I'm saying that before I go to the panel, because this is what the people tell me they hear as a result of listening to this show. They say, it's very interesting to hear how you guys met. It's very interesting to see how you stuck together. And many people say to me, by the way, all the crap that we hear in the national news media for 3-4 days, all of a sudden it disappears. Nobody talks about it. But you remain focused and consistent about your message. And that's very important. So my thanks to our panel member, Larkin Conley, Rich Loges, Mark Andel, Henry, and also to Mike Sessions, who's also done his best now to help us continue to promote. I'm going to ask Henry if we can get an email out to everybody. We have a huge mailing list. Send it out to everybody this week, asking them to spread the word about the new app. And let's rock and roll, guys. Well, I'm going to begin today with Rich Loges. How are you doing, Rich?
Hey, Michael. Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for mentioning my show.
Have you seen the new app from Mike Sessions?
I did. I just updated it before coming on.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful piece, man. I'm telling you, I was so impressed. Thank you, Mike, again.
Yeah, well, Michael, we've got to get you a phone now so you can utilize that app all the time.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm going to confess, Henry and I did go yesterday because Gabriella likes to do FaceTime, and my phone is not FaceTime capable. So that has, made me think.
There are very few flip phones on the marketplace that will do Facebook.
Yeah. Well, so but the main thing is I've done some research, Rich, and you remember you told me about the Moto X about 2 years ago?
Yes.
Well, that didn't come about, but I did learn because of an interview that was done that much of the iPhone is, the parts for the iPhone are made in America.
Yeah.
They are. Is that true, Mark?
Yeah, the glass is right from Corning up by us. There's certain parts of it. And like I said, that new company is moving into Wisconsin now that Foxconn is building here as we speak. So that's going to be interesting. And I think Mr. Cook with the iPhone, I think they're planning on building more and more here.
Now, what I understood from Mr. Cook's recent interview is that 60% of the phone parts are all made in America, shipped to China for assembly, and then brought to America under the old rules and regulations because it's a foreign product that's a 2% tariff. If it was assembled in America, we would have a much bigger payout on that product, which was, I can't understand how that would be possible. But according to what's going to be happening there in Wisconsin and a couple other places, we will see more and more of those phones, not only the parts made in America, but also assembled in America. And the packaging will be able to read made in the USA. Now, that cheers me up. And if it says made in the USA with some foreign parts, I love it, because that means we're a global economy participant and we're also supporting American workers. That's the whole deal. Rich, tell me what was on your mind.
Well, you know, Michael, sorry to sort of change gears here on a second, because with an open forum, I want to ask you something, Michael, and this is for Larkin, Mark. All of us are parents here, right? We have a lot of parents, grandparents who listen to our show. The only reason I don't have grandparents is because I decided to have kids 2 years away from ARP and Medicare. So I want to ask you guys, and Michael, let me start with you as the host. I'm going to put you on the spot here for a second.
Sure.
Can you tell me, give me some idea politically why this girl, Molly Tibbetts, is not alive right now? Why?
Well, Rich,
tell me what's the cause of it? You know, I know that there's a lot. I know there's always, you know, the cover up by the Democrat media industrial complex. And I know the Republicans are always afraid of saying something because they don't want to be labeled racist by the Washington Post, like Willard Romney runs to find out how the New York Times scored his debate performance last night. But why? What's the cause of it? What's going on in this kind of thing? Kate Steinle, Molly Tibbetts, Michael, tell me, what do you think?
Well, I'll tell you why, what's been going on. People wanted to be Santa Clauses in this country. When times were good, they thought that bringing everybody in, feeding everybody is going to be the workers and they're going to be the kings and the queens in the 535 of them in Washington. It didn't work out this way. We're bringing in people. I mean, Rich, would you want just anybody walking in your front door, jumping over your fence, doing anything? No, you wouldn't want to do it. You would want to know that they were invited. And by the way, when some of your parents' family from Poland and Italy and Mark's Greece and Germany and Poland, Larkin from Ireland, they came here with an invitation. Most of them came here at the time of the Industrial Revolution. They were invited. When they arrived at the ports of entry, they were expected. A particular company, a particular family met them, brought them here. Is that the case now? Why is that not the case? What allowed that to change? I do not understand it. And I tell every politician that I meet, I don't want these people in America unless they're fully documented. Now, we do have a major, major issue. We have some 15, 20 years. They've been great people. They should all be put on the payrolls, pay their taxes, allowed to do what a regular person should do, but not run immediately for the citizenship gig. They should have to wait 10 or 12 years because they did come here illegally. They broke the first rule. Enter the right gate and you enter as a welcome guest. Run to the back door and jump over the fence and you're not a welcome guest. You're an intruder. These people with all these sanctuary cities and all this is insanity. The rules are the rules. A couple of weeks ago, I said we have to obey the rules, just like a driving rule. Stop says the red light. Go says the green. Wait says the yellow light flashing in between. I remember that from school. These people don't want to wait. They just want to run in. The green signal is open. Run in. Until this past election, we have not addressed this issue for years and years and years. I remember train loads of the Dreamers coming over and everybody just sat back and did nothing. It's got to stop. It has to stop.
So allow me to ask, and I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. You know, the immigration process broke down. There's not an exceptional number of immigrants coming to this country in the 20s and 10, you know, the 1910s and 20s and 30s. We have a lot of immigrants coming to our shore, and they all pretty well handled it according to the law. But somewhere along the way, the system broke down. So my only comment to you, Michael, would be careful that you don't blame the people. They went into the country, and they're coming in the only way they understand that they can. We've got to fix the immigration process.
Yes, Larkin, I agree. 1,000%.
And to you, Rich, I would say be careful that you don't make what you're saying sound like every illegal immigrant or every undocumented immigrant is a felon. That's like putting them all in the same and saying, okay, if she was killed by an illegal immigrant, she should still be alive. All illegal immigrants got to go.
Can I make a comment, Larkin, to that?
Sure.
Because I think that's a grand slam, hit it out of the park, into the parking lot to win the game comment. And I always joke that I'm so anti-immigrant, I decided to marry one. And so it is crucial. You guys are both correct, I think, on this point. And sorry, Mark, let me just make a comment here, because it's crucial, Michael, that parts of what you said, and Larkin, what you're saying. And one of the key issues that we talked about all the time from the past election in 2016 was, once and for all, Americans of differing political beliefs and ideologies want immigration, specifically illegal immigration, they want it resolved. We had what I consider, in my opinion, to be a very fair DACA proposal from the president. And it's done. And the deal was done. Why? Because, number one, Democrats don't want 10 years, Michael, for citizenship. And Mitch McConnell, with a Republican majority in the House and Senate, won't hold a vote on it. How stupid is that?
Now, I was at an event 2 weeks ago. Rich, a good point that you bring this up. I was at an event with Senator Tommy and Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick and a few others. We were talking. And the people who were there, they were saying, America doesn't have any more room for illegals. We have to start looking at the people who are within our country. We have to get them back into the trades, back into the skills, back into the work mode. When we get so many jobs in America that we need more people, that's what we do when we did that in 1890, 1900, and 1910. We opened the doors and said, please come and help us in every way, in any way that we need you. But that's not the case now. They run to the back door. Our people, we can't afford the poverty level people that we have in America right now. How can we open the door to anybody? Mark, you're a businessman. If you have 100 people working and 200 people come to you looking for a job, well, you would want to help those people, but you can't employ them because you only have 100 jobs available.
Right.
What don't these people understand about this?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment. Rich, great topic open for him to bring that up, because, boy, having a daughter myself, Mike, you do, Rich Larkin, boy, does it hit close to home. You're watching World News last year, you see that, and then your daughter's found by undocumented immigrant led right to her. Wow. So having my first Texas bus Saturday, we were very impressed. It came 2 hours late, so last Saturday, with the fair going on and everything, I stayed and waited for it myself. And It's funny because the people come off, my mother even said today, boy, I learn a lot from them buses and Mike and crew. There's no better way. You have all these buses coming from every part of the country, demographic 50 to, you know, 80, 90. But this gentleman, they were talking about Texas, and I was talking about they're from Houston area. And he said somehow he got on this with the illegals coming in, and he said, we've got to stop it. He said, I served our country. I'm sick of seeing the flag of other there are countries that sneak in here on their front lawn. He said, I've got a house. I've got a fence around it. You can't just jump over my fence and come in my house. You got to come through the front door. He was so upset, and it caused about six other ones to turn around. He said, we've got to do something. They're for the wall. They're for something being done on this. But then you see this girl killed by an undocumented immigrant, too. And Larkin, I'm with you. It's a touchy subject, but it's got to be addressed soon.
It must be addressed, and the politicians that I am meeting with at these various public summer season events are saying the same thing. Whether they're Democrats or Republicans, they say, well, it's got to be addressed, and it hasn't been addressed in my 20 years in Congress.
Mike, you said if I had 200 extra employees, so I've almost got 100 now, you can't just let them run in. You've got to interview them, and they've got to go through a process.
Right.
You've got to make sure they're going to listen, abide by our handbook, abide by our rules, and have the training, and they're qualified. You have to do this. This is common sense again.
You know, you're right. And you know, Larkin, you said something last week, I believe, and I was out to two very nice events this weekend. I want to thank everybody from the Second Street Polish Society for the invitation and all the people that we had this. You said something, Larkin, which hit the nail on the head. We need an intern tax break for employers. This is very interesting, and I'll tell you why people found it interesting. Because they have sons and daughters who went to great colleges, paid out a lot of money, they're $70,000 and $80,000 in debt, and guess who wants to hire them for what? They want to hire them for manufacturing, not to standing there just putting things together, but keeping the manufacturing line running smooth. All the computers, everything is computer generated now. It has to be perfect. These people are not into that. They had other majors. I don't want to bring any particular major up, but they were in other majors. No one in those schools told them, this is not going to take you anywhere other than to an $80,000 debt. I talked to a young man just the other day, two of them. I said, did they talk about resumes in school? He went to a top-rate school, never brought it up. How is that possible? How is it possible? Those boys and girls in high school and in college should be making a resume and making a reservation with their next student over to critique it. To see what you have available. What can I say? I like that, what you're doing. Nothing. Nothing was ever done about it. I asked the teacher in a very well-known institution just the other day, and said, no, that's not our job. How is it not your job to get prepared for a job? To tell your students how to get prepared for a job. I don't understand it. But this is the way America's school system has gone. This lackadaisical, just move, let it go, let it go, let it go. I am tired of it. The people are tired of it. People tell me they don't even want to listen to the news anymore because all it does is knock somebody else down. What are they building up? Mark, how many of the press came to your store and said, you are employing people. You've come up like the phoenix. After they knocked you down, you went up and you're going up. How many of the press came to your front door and said, I want to publicize your efforts?
Yeah.
Are they banging on the door?
Not many. You know, I will say, guys, on a positive note, we finished our 12-day Erie County Fair run. And, Mike, we've talked about it. It's quite a haul. My team, just outstanding for General Welding and Made in America. And we set some records, but I will say 1.2 million people came through that fair in 12 days. They now go to the state fair. It's a huge show, and we had a winter snow gauge we sponsored, which showed the 199 inches that fell the year after the blizzard of 77, which we took ownership of. And Mike and crew, boy, do the women want to kill me after that, talking about snow in the middle of the summer. But 199 inches. And then what we did is a flag retreat seminar ceremony. Every night at 6:30, we gave a flag to a hero. 80-person-plus band every night, singing of the Pledge of Allegiance, and then recognizing this hero. And everybody came to me after we sponsored it first year. They said, it's so emotional. I said, I see this emotion all the time. You see a World War II vet sitting in a chair and whatnot. But, Mike, all these people, and we did a couple other things, but talking to the people about the Made in America, this year, our 8 year in, they gave us so much respect, but thank yous, union people came. Everybody came. But the thank yous of what we're doing, even the radio show people mentioned, it just hats off to all of us. This movement's alive and well. When you talk, when a million people come through and every night I talk, my voice is still kind of gone. It's just awesome to hear the movement's on, and they see the positiveness in this country. Even talking to the carnies, they're up 20%. There's a reason, because disposable income's up too.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
There's reasons. I talked to smart people these last 12 days. It's happening, and it's very neat to be part of.
I was down in Wildwood over the weekend at the Seaport, New Seaport Place, and over Echoes and all these places. People are in a better mood. People feel there's some progress being made. Of course, nothing's going to happen overnight. After you've destroyed all the good for 30, 35 years, it's not going to bloom up like a flower in one season. This is going to take time. You have to build from the foundation up. You never start from the roof down. And the people understand that. But the people do not understand why the press doesn't reverse its stuff and say, President Trump, why aren't you doing more for this? President Trump, we should have this. President Trump, we should have this intern tax break that Larkin Conley were. They're not doing that. It's all about all these people and Amoroso and all these other individuals. Where did these people go? What are they doing for the well-being of the taxpayers, the sons and daughters of the great people of America? What are they doing? Who wants to sit there? Yes, Malarkin.
I went in the other day, Michael, to see my doctor. And I told her about all of my symptoms, and she said, I've been doing quite a bit of reading about this, and this is a new phenomenon that you have. And I said, really? And she said, yeah, I haven't had one of my patients come in with it yet, but this has all of the earmarks. And I said, well, what's it called? And she said, it's called news cycle fatigue. And what it makes you do is kill your liver by excessive drinking to make the noise go away. So, and most of the time, I kind of like diseases like that because I do take a liking to my vodka. But, boy, this disease is really a challenge. It really is. I break into a dead sweat when the news comes on. And I can't change channels anymore because while I hear them talking about the same story, I'm getting a different version from two different stations.
I agree. Oh, man, do I agree with that.
I have my side. I have my beliefs and all of that. But goodness gracious, there's an S word that I'd like to use with this, but I know that WWDB would cut me out so quickly, but this is a real show. This really is a real show that we have going on, and it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. You know, and Larkin, I agree, and most people that I talk to, they say, Michael, whether it was Donald Trump or Barack Obama or anybody else, this should have been done 30 years ago. There was no national governor in America. They just sat in the White House, they sat in the House and Senate, and they never communicated to the real bread and butter issues of the American people.
It's funny you say that.
I'm going to throw this perfectly on top of what you said. I heard all of these complaints about taking the high-level security from Brennan. And I thought, we've turned this into a political question when it's not a political question at all. I'm going to take you back into the 70s when Kissinger stepped down as the Secretary of State Henry Kissinger stepped down from Nixon. And he started a thing called, I think it was Kissinger Associates. And you could have Henry Kissinger's ear for a day for $1 million. And all national companies as well as international corporations couldn't wait to hear what he had to say about the condition of the world and where things should be taken to. I mean, they were talking about Bill. They were covering everything from a guy who had the highest level of involvement with national security. So here's a guy out of office making $1 million a crack, selling information that the very innocent CIA has collected from all around the world, the highest level of information, and he's selling it. And I just don't get it.
With a national security clearance. My advice is this. When you leave service, you should leave your service security behind, and it should be ready to be updated at a moment's notice as needed. All of these people going on these book tours and all with security clearances, it sounds disgraceful to me.
Right.
It makes it look like they're really on the in crowd. I think they should all be revoked and put on today in the computer world. If you're coming to the White House, you're going to the House or Senate, you're going to do a hearing, you update the clearance. You're allowed in to be part of that particular category of event, hearing, whatever, but not for you to leave and have that clearance follow you for 20, 30 years. I mean, I think it should be immediately revoked. Not revoked, but put on reserve.
No, it's revoked.
Revoked until needed.
Why should you get emails every day?
Exactly.
Right.
No. You're going to turn around and sell them to some international corporation? Nah, come on.
Richard, what do you think of that?
Well, you know, Michael, my documented disgust with the Democrat media industrial complex is long and detailed, which is not to say that I think that opposite perspective media is perfect, because it isn't. But that's why more people, Michael, have to listen to the Rich Loggia show, because you're not going to hear at my show what you hear on CNN and Fox and
that's
MSNBC.
Right.
You know, and Michael, can I just, you know, because I feel like I left this as an unfinished business point with Larkin, that people absolutely need to heed Larkin's advice that people have to resist the temptation to lump immigrants who have come to the U.S. as criminals, right? As violent felons and criminals. And I don't even view people that way, Larkin. You know, that's both sides do it, but you know, the Dems make a political ideology out of segmenting people. I ascribe to the Martin Luther King version of human interaction, Michael, that we assess and judge people on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And I'll add, not based on their ethnicity or gender or where they're from. Race, gender, ethnicity, and country of origin aren't skills. They're accidents.
And we should never allow the press to divide people in this country or anywhere else in the world by race, color, creed,
Mike,
or
right,
economic background.
They're one of the ones leading that.
Perfect. Oh, terrible. Now, Rich, I want to get back to your thought, just a thought from me. I would ask everyone listening and all of our panel members to put themselves in the place of a Kate Steinle family. How would you feel if your flesh and blood was slaughtered by anybody, by an American, by an illegal alien or whatever? it's all of this is happening because there's too much hate and anger in the world. And it's brought about.
I mean, we've had men killing and raping women.
Absolutely,
since the Boston Strangler.
I know, but there's too many of these people have bad ideas. Why are there so many shootings going on all over the United States? That's a big focus
because
on the news.
Because you've got a 24-hour news cycle. We're not killing anymore.
But we're not. We're not teaching people love and kindness, brotherhood, a good. Working skills. A lot of these poor souls that are sitting in prison are sitting there because they didn't have the opportunity to get skills, good example, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, you know, listen, it's a 24-hour news cycle. When I was 15 years old, when I was 13, 12 years old, and I came home from school, I couldn't sit down and turn on the television because there was nothing on television. It was closed. Yeah. There was just this round circle with all kind of weird designs on it. And it didn't come on air until 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I had to go outside and play. Now we just pound people and pound them and pound them with stuff that normally we wouldn't even publish.
Yep.
We wouldn't even have aired.
Larkin, there's so much information being processed by these kids from their iPhones to whatever. But, Mike, you're right, too. Breakdown of family, as we always talked about, is a major issue with the values, and that's kind of controlling what comes into the country. But, Larkin, you're absolutely right. I was thinking about it the other day. I never looked up when I started my business. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have information. I didn't know what was going on, which is good and bad, but I just went. But there's so many things that trip you up, confuse you, make you think. So much to process the information that's out there. You have to do that somehow, but you can't live in that box and listen to it all the time.
It's right. And you know, Mark, I will just add this. I think 10 years ago, people were a lot more able to communicate with each other. Young people were more social skills. Today, they're sitting there watching that TV, looking at the phone. They even spell check. They can't spell. They can't add. Many of the young people, I trick them up when I go to the stores. If it's one charge, I'll give them change. If I give it to 163 and I give 175, they look at it like, oh, my God, what is this? And because they're so used to just putting it into the cash register and have the change fly out the side panel, you know, they're just not used to it.
That's why at this big fair, seeing a million people, if I've seen 500,000 in the last 12 days, you see every walk of life, all different people. You learn a lot by going to the fair with the car and he's getting your change, Mike, like you're talking. But I thought about building things as cool, working on things. I thought, what did I do? Well, I built models, Estes rockets. You built things, you tried things, you learn from building, but a lot of that's lost actually doing that hands-on stuff as a kid. And, you know, Henry was building a guitar when he was 4, you know. Maybe he was 5. But you were doing something, right?
You were doing something, yeah. You were creative.
Build a tree fort or something.
Right, you were creative. In school, you were asked to be creative. Today, that's not the case. You go on the net, you go on your cell phone, you create something, and you hand it in, you give a presentation. Another thing we were just talking about this yesterday. Before, the people in school, and even my kids, when they were in school, they would have to get up and stand up and read portions of paragraphs. Everybody had, it was like public speaking, you know, just to get you up and into, they don't do that anymore. Teachers.
No.
They don't do that. And in fact, if you went into the prisons, Larkin, and you talked, I'd like to see CNN, Fox, and everybody else spend an hour a day for the next month talking with people who are incarcerated. Go in there and interview them to see what they would have done differently in their life so they would never reach the point they did.
That's a problem. That's way too deep for me. But I had a conversation with two very, very close friends of mine, Chelsea Pivas and Jeremiah Bourne. I've known Chelsea since she was a little girl, and she came and visited us this and my daughter this whole week. As a matter of fact, she's leaving today. And we had a conversation last night. It was either last night or the night before, right after dinner, we were sitting in my daughter's kitchen. And I don't know how we got to how do you sign your name and how do you do this. I was talking about my handwritten notes that I sent out, blah, 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 blah. And I said, I wonder how JoJo's going to sign her name. And my daughter said, well, you might as well teach her. And I said, well, I don't have to teach her. She's going. And she said, Dad, I hate to surprise you. They do not teach cursive writing in school.
I heard
they
that.
Do not teach handwriting in the public school system.
Now, Larkin, as a taxpayer, are you pleased that that happened? Mark, as a taxpayer, are you pleased that that happened?
No, you have to write. I write every day. I hear this, Larkin. It's unbelievable that, you know, you have to teach these soft skills and even check writing the basics, life skills. It's missing. I've talked to everybody. They don't know how to write a check, or but not to teach writing.
My kids know both, but, yeah, they stopped teaching it. But I think the thought process is that when are you going to have to sign a check? At some point, you're just going to – I mean, I'm taking pictures of checks and putting them in the bank over my phone. I mean, at some point, you're just going to use a fingerprint to do anything. You're not going to have to sign anything.
Yeah, don't go camping,
exactly right,
because there's no power.
How about if you're signing a greeting card to someone and you want to say love so-and-so? You can't do it. It's a chicken scratch. I've seen people now putting it on the – after they put their credit card in, I stand behind them, and they just go up and down, up and down, up and down. Not a signature, just some kind of up and down to get it over with. And I think to myself, wow, here I am trying to put my signature in there. I thought maybe that's not the thing to do now. Just anything to get it through the approval process. As taxpayers, parents and grandparents have to speak up to the school people. If cursive was a sin or something, that's one thing. But it's an art everybody should learn. We should learn to print. We should learn to write. We should learn to spell. And we should learn to add. Most people, as soon as you say the two or three figures, they immediately have to pull out the cell phone to add it up. And it's small numbers.
We can't abandon technology, and I'm not asking to abandon technology. But somewhere along the line, I would think one teacher would say, okay, everybody, it's going to be important someday, maybe not very often, that you write your name.
Right, and also, if your cell phone breaks down, you're out. You're just dead until it's repaired. You're totally out. If you're in a math class and you need to add something up at the end to see what your score is going to be and your cell phone is down, you're not there. You have nothing. You have to wait for the teacher to return your test. Like that, if you knew something, you got, you filled in 20 out of 30 questions, you at least know your percentages or whatever. People don't think that way anymore.
Yeah,
one of the most important documents in this country is a work of art, if you look at the bottom of it, for the signatures, to a point that we even now say, put your John Hancock down there. Take a look at the bottom of the Constitution and the beautiful handwriting and the commitment that's made through that handwriting on that document.
So
we're going to tell kids you don't have to ever be. Let me ask
you this. Every business document I sign daily, any closing you go to, legal document has to have your signature on it. So you have to learn how to do your signature.
You have to.
There'll be an electronic signature. It'll just be like, you know, whatever that is for today, even when you're doing stuff electronically.
But then I'll get a copy of yours, Henry.
What's that?
Then I could get a copy of yours, right?
I sat at the closing table when I bought the current house that I'm in for over 2.5 hours, and I signed my name 48 times. You mean they're going to have a computer sitting there, and when it's time for me to sign my name, I'm going to hit an electrical signature?
Yeah. And you'll have to sign it once, and it'll just be duplicated over 40 times. That's probably the thought. I mean, it'll go in that.
Yeah, but see, that I would not.
It's not here yet because I didn't do it yet. So, I mean, how could they not teach it in school yet? I just don't. You know, it's not time that it's gone.
And listen, you're opening the floodgates for attorneys.
Oh, you better believe it, Larkin. Boy, that was well said. Whoa. Yeah. Let me tell you something. When somebody gives you a document right now, and I know this from working in human services, people are very, very cautious about signing their name to anything, especially when it comes time. It's some kind of government or legal document. They want to make sure that the person on the other side of the desk is giving them truthful information, complete information, no nonsense whatsoever.
And it can't be even a pistol permit. My son's just doing, we went down with one. It can't be a copy of a copy. They needed two separate forms, totally filled out with your four character references. And we took one down, and they said, no, you can't copy it on a fancy copier. It has to be in handwriting. It's funny. My daughter is going into 11th grade, and she just said to me that our local school has just issued, they're going to issue all computers, laptops, and she wasn't that happy. But now I'm thinking about that, Larkin, because actually she wanted to be able to do scratch notes when she's doing algebra and whatnot, and you can't. That's interesting.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying they're not even teaching them how to print your name or write, and she's just going in Iroquois. She wasn't happy. She had this discussion about a month ago. I said, what do you mean? She said, no, everybody's getting a laptop, and we can't, and she likes to figure out things on paper. So do I.
Well, you know, Mark, at a job fair, I did have someone say to me,
yeah,
I want to do something. I want to send an email, but I need a terminal. I can't write in what they're asking. Is there some way I could put it on the terminal and email it to you?
Yeah.
I thought to myself, what a nice kid this was, and yet no ability to write five sentences.
I want to hear Rich's comments, a journalist.
Journalist, Richard, let's hear it.
Yeah, well, you know, this comes back, Larkin's saying, this comes back to another long and well-documented disgust I've had with education in particular in our country over the last many decades. And I've said before, Michael, I don't actually blame the teachers. I believe the vast majority of the teachers really seek to teach and be positive influences in their
I agree with that.
In their students' lives. And you know, this point about what goes on in school, Michael, I think while it's a very valid point, there's no doubt about that, there is something that happens before school, though, and that's what happens in the home. That's what goes on within the four walls of the home. And that's why the youth, for me, is such a significant issue, because if we don't win the war at home, really nothing else matters. You can throw $1 billion at the worst schools, and all that will likely happen is just $1 billion will get spent with no actual positive measurable results,
mm-hmm.
improvements. Fact. Because the school is the next, that's part of the development, but it's all about what goes on at home. And a lot of people find this to be, I guess, contradictory or surprising, but I actually don't want my kids, Michael, being political activists. I don't want that. I went out to my mailbox last night, and we get New Yorker magazine, and every time I get it, I ask my wife, we're not paying for this, are we? Because you want to talk about a D-Mike rag, New Yorker magazine, okay? I mean, we just get it because of points on whatever, you know, credit card debt I racked up when my kid was born. And on the cover of the magazine, David Hogg, the kid from Parkland. And I'm sitting there laughing my you-know-what off, because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, so tell me it's 17 years old, Michael. I mean, you knew everything about the world, right? I mean, I love talking to 16-year-old activists, Mark, because they tell me what James Madison really meant when he wrote the Second Amendment. How else at 15 would you like to infringe upon my rights since you're so learned and so worldly? And I'm sitting here going, man, that kid, fair or unfair, Michael, that kid is going to have half the country hate him for the rest of his life.
And you know, parents, it does
empower it.
And it doesn't
empower that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying don't, you know, I think, Michael, that, and this is what my book, 10 Warning Signs Your Child is Becoming a Democrat, will be about. You've got to sprinkle, I believe, some politics in the upbringing, right? Kids have to understand that that just showing up shouldn't warrant a trophy or a plaque. Right, that kids can understand that And I'm not saying you give him a whole PhD lecture, right? Because I got a PhD also, public high school diploma. You don't get kids obsessed with politics when they're young. You let them be kids. That's what you do. And it's funny how in the U.S. right now, we seem to have two extremes at work. We have parents who are good people, but they don't ever pay attention to anything political as it relates to their kids. And then we've got the other side who have produced a new generation of redcoat Hitler youth creepy kid activists.
Yeah,
and I'm sitting here going, we are living in the damn Twilight Zone, Larkin, right now.
Yeah, yep.
How does it, Rich, how does it end? How would you like to see the school your daughter is going to attend start teaching writing? Are you going to have to go to the school boards now and say you have a daughter that's coming to the first grade in a few years? I want her to learn how to write. Are you going to have to do that? Get them on your show, rip their heads off publicly, get yourself an even bigger audience in your neighborhood? This is what has to be done. But it sounds insane to say that, but this is the only way you get things done is by being an activist, positive activist.
Things are not going to just gets me so agitated at so many of my Republican and conservative friends. They're good people, they mean well, but they think that stuff is going to just get better on its own.
Right.
That's the biggest bunch of bull that I've ever heard when it comes to politics. You know that my article, Michael, the article that I have out today that just published, you know what it's entitled? Youths Embracing Socialism is a Major GOP Failure. Yes, that's what I wrote. Because I already know what's happened over the years with the Dems infesting virtually every industry in the country, especially where the youth are. And then the so-called loyal opposition party, well, they've been more loyal than opposition. And a lot of parents who mean well, Michael, okay, they do. They're good people. But what I see is the market for what Rich Lowe just does is I think there's a part of parenting in the youth where a lot of good people, if they just, it's like you don't know what you don't know. And if you get that info, the changing demographics of this country, Michael, if we do not take on those demographics head on and we don't start actually engaging those people rather than shunning them, instead of shunning youth and shunning black Americans and shunning Hispanics, if we don't take on those demographics head on and have the courage of our convictions and be willing to get in front of them and get stuff thrown at us, the demographics of this country, maybe it won't happen in 10 years, but in 30 or 40 years, it, like the socialist schoolgirl in New York now, in 30 to 40 years, if we don't take on the demographics, that will be common, Michael.
You're right. I can't agree more.
It will not be the fringe anymore.
And you know, Rich, they're all these people like this girl in New York and so many of these new socialist type people. They haven't asked one big question. Who is going to pay the bill?
But they don't need to. But Michael, but
Uncle Sam has no money. We're broke.
But she doesn't need to explain that. It's 11-1 registered Democrats to Republicans. She doesn't need to explain anything. She doesn't have to get out of bed before noon. In my congressional district, we have Lois Frankel. Do you guys know that my congresswoman not only didn't have a Democratic primary challenger, she has no Republican challenger, Larkin? She's guaranteed to get reelected. Guaranteed. And I know some people who went to her office recently. They tried to storm her office to get her to answer questions. I looked at them. I said, you think she cares what you think? She doesn't need to work with you. You don't vote for her. You think she gives a damn? Michael, they don't have to explain anything. So the answer to your question is the same answer now as it was when Franklin stood a mile away from you and said, a republic if you can keep it. It's the same damn answer, Michael, today. Same one.
Yep.
So before we close, I've got to pull something out that Rich said that might be the most brilliant thing you've ever said, and it really represents one of the problems we have in this country. There are actually people out there right now involved in the news cycle, watching the news cycle, who think things in this country are going to get better if you elect somebody else. That's one of the most brilliant things you've said so far. Things are going to get better just because you elect somebody else. Or you
Larkin,
somebody else and you put somebody else in there.
Larkin, the only reason things got a little better in America is because the two people running for office did speak their minds and what they would do. And it's the first time in many years the American people listened and then they voted for what they thought was really something they needed to happen. And this is...
And everything's better now?
It's getting better because, last election, the last presidential election, Hillary and Trump really let everything be put on the table. People, when they went to the polls in November, knew why they were going to pull this one or that one's vote. They knew about the wall. They knew about this. They had talking about jobs, talking about make America great again. And Hillary, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to do this. We want more people. We want open borders. We want this. People decided, no, we need somebody that has a different slant on things. And that's the only thing. And new people but they have to debate publicly what they're all about, not just because they're this particular party or another. Oh, no. Larkin, we're going to have continue open forum next week, and we're going to bring up this subject again. Because this is very, very important. America and American workers need us, and they need us now. I don't care if it's Trump, Schmump, or Bump who's in the office as president. I want somebody who's going to do the things he's doing. I don't care what he does privately. I care what he does for Americans. Period.
I'm worried about the pen and pencil manufacturers, Mike. No more writing.
Yeah, very good point. Oh,
right,
my God.
Right.
Yeah, these politicians will be giving out pens and all, and people will say, what's that for?
Yeah, you have to start throwing them like a dart. Have a great week, guys.
Have a great one. God bless.
Thank you, guys.
Until
you guys.
This Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, best wishes to you and yours.